If you're a lineman in charge of keeping the lights on, Grainger understands that you go to great lengths, and sometimes heights, to ensure the power is always flowing. Which is why you can count on Grainger for professional-grade products and next-day delivery, so you have everything you need to get the job done. Call 1-800-GRAINGER, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
Welcome to NetFront Presents. This is the jubilant postseason edition of the NetFront. Boy, I tell you what, Matthew, we didn't imagine we'd be in this spot back in the middle of the season. We didn't think we'd have to go to our playoff-tested colleague, Tom Timmerman, a veteran of many campaigns, to come back in and assist with this because, well, this continues to be a stunning turn of events. Let's start with you, Matthew. You sat through a lot of so-so hockey this year. Then the team caught fire. Now, a couple of lopsided wins over the Winnipeg Jets, and the league's taking notice.
Yeah, and you know, when you think back to February, and you're like, okay, 8 points back out at the Four Nations break, like, that's not, you're gonna have to play incredible hockey down the stretch. They haven't won three games in a row. I don't think they can do it. You know, they win three games in a row. They get to the trade deadline. Doug Armstrong says, yeah, it's still going to be an uphill climb, and we just lost Colton Parayko for, you know, 17 games. So we'll just have to wait and see what it looks like. And they've earned the right to give us a look. And then during the, even before the 12-game win streak, they lose to Pittsburgh. You're like, you just lost in overtime to Los Angeles. You lost to Pittsburgh. Or maybe the wheels are coming off again. And then here we are. 2-2, heading back to Winnipeg for game five. And this is a situation that the Blues have become comfortable with, like having to win a lot of games in a short period of time. Like, you lose the first two games of the series, you got to win four out of the next five. That's just how the math works, right? And they've had to do that in during the last 2 months of the regular season. And so this is not anything new to them. And they came home and handled business in a big, big way.
I wasn't sure they could do this last week. I mean, after they dropped the first two in Winnipeg, it was like, you know, they were close, but not, you know, they were just doing enough things wrong. And it's like, you know, could they master that and get it to go against Connor Hellebuck? And after they lost that first game, do you get a chance like that again to win in Winnipeg? I don't know, but here they are. And I think the series now kind of favors them with Hellebuck's, you know, adventures out there and the momentum they've gotten, kind of the answers they have found for doing this. I think while the numbers say Winnipeg is still favorite, I think the Blues are a strong case to be, you know, the pick in this series now.
Well, you know, Matthew, what surprised me is, you know, I mean, we knew that Hellebuck has had issues in the past in the postseason, but that team had such good structure. It was so sturdy, so firm. It played with such a, you know, just such a smothering style for the entirety of the campaign. And I thought finished the year on a pretty good note as well. And then, of course, they win that game too. You figure, okay, yeah, the Jets are back. I'm baffled as to how they could, in back-to-back games, just lose that structure. And this, like, and it seemed like they were baffled how a game that started well for them in game four completely got away.
Yeah, and you know, game three was just an absolute blitz. And that first period, maybe that first 10 minutes inside Enterprise Center, like you expect the crowd to be buzzing right off the start just because of the 3 year wait since a last postseason game, because of the way they finished the season and because they haven't lost there in 2 months. So you expected the crowd to be into it. And then the Blues gave them even more reason to be into it. And you look at the way that they scored their goals. I mean, Buchnevich is almost in the crease basically and kicks the puck, deflects it in. He has a tip. You have Fowler driving the net. You know, Buchnevich capitalizes on a Hellebuck mistake. Kyrie's at 5-on-3. Torpchenko is at the net deflecting something. And then, you know, Parayko has that one-timer. And so you look at all of those different goals and even the ones on Sunday, Neighbors a net front tip, you know, Tucker with the traffic in front, Shen literally in the crease taking the puck away from Connor Hellebuck. Falk off a deflection in front, like Thomas tucking it home, like in the crease. All of the goals, almost all of them, have had something to do with people bodies at the net front, and that seemed to really bother Connor Hellebuck. And it's not often we see him get pulled in back-to-back games, and it's now three straight road postseason games that he's been pulled. And as we are sitting down to tape this, he was just announced as a Vezina Trophy finalist, as he should be for his really superb regular season. But that guy is nowhere to be found in the last two games. And the Blues have really taken advantage of getting a lot of nets, getting a lot of shots to the net, and a lot of bodies there, getting the bounces that maybe Winnipeg got in the first couple of games. But the Blues have worked for them. You earn your bounces sometimes, and the Blues have definitely earned them.
With the Blues winning, the two games that combined 12-3, really talk about pressure on game five for Winnipeg. To come if they come back to St. Louis for a six game six, which could be decisive in the Blues' favor, that puts some pressure on them in game five. So they if they don't win game five on Wednesday, that puts them in a really tough spot.
Yeah, and I think like the other part is when you're St. Louis and you lose the first two in Winnipeg, they can look at their game and be like, you know what, we played okay. Like I don't mind the way that we played hockey. You were in both games in the third period. You had a chance to win. They made one more play. Their best players were better. Kyle Connor and Mark Scheifele were the two best players on the ice in those two games, and you can live with those sorts of results if the process is fine for St. Louis. On the flip side, Winnipeg goes home right now. They cannot say even close to the same thing as St. Louis did leaving Winnipeg. The Jets leave St. Louis and they look at their game and they see holes everywhere. They see holes in net. They see Connor and Scheifele disappearing for the most part. I know Connor had a goal yesterday, but it's not the same impacts that they had in games one and two. So they don't have that same sort of feeling or confidence belief that St. Louis would have had coming back after game two, even though they were down 2-0.
I want to get your reaction to something. It just struck me, and so I'm wondering how a Winnipeg fan thinks about it. That they've got a lot to think about, but Coach Scott O'Neill's persona is one of almost sleepy in terms of his demeanor. And we're just judging a guy off a post game news conference after watching a guy coach the bench. Does he strike you as a bit different that way? I know we had Drew Bannister here, and who was a different cat himself before Jim Montgomery took over. But I kind of wonder if I'm a fan. I'm watching Arneil's reaction to this game, and I want to see a little more fury, I would think, at least some outward. It just struck me as odd. What did you guys think?
Well, I think he's it probably feels in his situation where he has to project calm. Things are okay. We got clobbered two games in St. Louis, but really we're still all right. And I think that was the image he's trying to put out there, not a, oh my God, we're about to die.
What would that have sounded like if he had that sort of tone? I don't even. Yeah, I mean, I don't put too much stock into it, honestly. I think if he and Spencer Carberry probably going to be some finalists for Coach of the Year this year, right? And it doesn't just go away in a week. I don't know how much of the Jets' success can be directly attributed to him when you have the season that you had from Connor Hellebuck. But I don't know. It's you just got wiped twice in a row. I think it's you can be upset, but if you're the best team in the league, I think you got to show some confidence and some calm. And maybe he's shown that. Maybe he's different behind the scenes. Maybe the practices in Winnipeg or behind the closed doors in the room is a different sort of personality than he was in front of the press. Like you mentioned Drew Bannister, Gordo, and yeah, he had a very different persona, very quiet. There are some times on the road, if just to tell people about how it works on the road, there's a backdrop in a hallway basically outside of the Blues dressing room where the coach will usually speak. And on the road, there are trucks and carts and foot traffic all the time in those hallways, whether it's delivering to suites in that lower level or equipment trucks and all that stuff. And there were some times when something would go by and you wouldn't be able to hear what Drew Bannister said, or if there was a question on the other side of the scrum and he turned his head and spoke, you couldn't be able to hear him. Now, the flip side of that is, I think it was last year in Calgary, there was one game where he absolutely lit into them during the second intermission, and some people that were outside of the room said they had never heard any coach use that sort of language or volume before. And like that was just a different sort of guy that we had become accustomed to seeing. So it's not always what you see out there. It's sometimes different behind closed doors, I guess is what I'm trying to say.
It's I would assume there had to be after that second period that may have been, I don't know if anybody would, we know anybody who was listening in on the Jets, but he couldn't have been pleased with that. One of the themes for the Blues in this playoff series and early success of the season just continues is the activation of the defenseman. Colton Parayko at even strength with all these points, barely sees time on the power play just at the end when they're wanting to protect. Yet he is so effective. All these guys have had some ability to generate offense, and we're seeing them activate, go in. Cam Fowler going in ahead on a clear break, and it's just continued. And this has been, it's a nice, believe me, from a guy who covered a team that had the likes of, Jimmy Pavese and Robert Dirk and some other guys on the blue line that were not there for their offense. Harold Sneps comes to mind immediately as well. This has been a big factor for Winnipeg to deal with.
Yeah, and I think it's, you can see with some of the plays that the defensemen make how early they make that decision to go. I think about that Fowler goal in game three, where he's coming from behind the net, sends the puck up the wall, and he knows he's going right up the middle of the ice. If he can beat Iafallo in a race, he's going to try to do that. And he sees the open ice and he takes it basically from his own hash marks. Like he in his own zone after he makes that play from behind the net. He looks at where the puck is, where the players are, and inside his own zone, he knows he's going, right? I think about some of the plays that Philip Roberg's made throughout the entire season, and he's making that decision early when to go inside his own blue line. So you see a lot of those decisions in transition, pushing the pace of play. And as you mentioned, Parayko, he helps set up that Schenn goal in game four right on the doorstep. So it's been a lot of activation and Justin Falk talked about it a little bit yesterday that that's how they get players out of position by moving their feet, by getting into the play, and then by making plays when guys are out of position. So the fact that the Blues are able to do that, able to honestly sometimes even help with their forecheck, when you have a pinching defenseman down a wall to keep a puck in, to keep the play alive in the O zone, that helps a lot. And it's honestly a sign of trust as well. From knowing that forwards are going to be able to cover you either in transition or in the zone.
But where was this in games one and two? I mean, that's, the number of shots by defensemen went up, greatly in games three and four. It's like, all of a sudden they looked at the scouting report again. Wait, we need to do this. This is a way we can exploit, shots from distance on help traffic in front of the net. It seems like, if they keep doing it, I guess that's a good thing for them. But they could have started earlier.
Well, one thing that's interesting, Matthew, is that when Winnipeg is playing well, they can just take away, they can keep you from getting started in this process, right? I mean, they can when they're really on, there's just no space, and guys, and I was just so surprising to see from Winnipeg's side suddenly there was a lot of ice, and in Winnipeg, when Tom's up in Winnipeg, there was hardly any ice for the guys to exploit. I mean, it was they had layers, right? And boy, the layers have just seem to go away at Enterprise Center.
Yeah, and even in game four, you saw it a little bit in the blue zone, that one shift where they scored a goal on, right? Like Fowler has the puck on the initial dump and he has a little bit of time to make a play and then they're on him and they get stuck in the zone. Schenn tries to make a pass to the middle, it gets deflected because they're on him. Neighbors has a turnover, and then the Jets are on the puck there. Parayko loses a net front battle. Like there were all these small little things that the Jets were doing, taking away time and space on a forecheck that created more offensive zone time that led to that goal that they scored to give them a 1-0 lead in game four. And you didn't really see too much of that after that. Like that was, I guess we can also, as much as credit the Jets, we can give a demerit to the Blues for how they played in their own zone there, but you didn't see a lot more of that from Winnipeg throughout the rest of that afternoon or even in game three that much.
And you wonder as they go back to Winnipeg, how much matchups factor in this with the Blues being able to get the matchups they wanted in St. Louis, that they were more able to dictate what they wanted to do. And do they lose that? This is a a great test of the importance of matchups and how decisive are they in these kind of things.
Yeah, you know that there's all that focus on Shifley and Connor, and you know with the last change, we're gonna see a lot of those guys on the ice, and it'll be interesting to see how you know Montgomery can respond and how you don't want to get caught on a change that becomes awkward trying to make a play and have a guy out there stuck, tired, getting beat as we saw in Winnipeg. Or guys scrambling back into a play. So yeah, it's going to be. I mean, there's a lot of advantage, and like Arneil was pointing out when he was asked again about adjustments that the Blues made. What adjustments is he going to make? He says we will make adjustments. I'm not going to talk about them here, but I am going. We trust me. We will make adjustments just as they did. So yeah, it'll be interesting to see what do you do, and do they other than really trying to feature those two guys at every chance they get, and jump them out there in favorable spots is. Do they do much else because they're not getting a lot of support from up and down the lineup?
Yeah, I guess the one thing that you'd be looking forward to as a Jets fan is it looks like Gabe Vilardi is pretty close to coming back. I mean, he was skating with them in practice. He took warm up the other day, did not take part in line rushes. Obviously, was not in the lineup, but this is a guy who scored 27 goals this year that they could be getting back for game five. And this is one of those, I guess, moments where the extra break helps the Jets this time, right? I think we were thinking about it earlier, and the extra break might have been helping Robert Thomas recover from what he was dealing with. Or when you're at home and you have, you know, your family and you have your own life and you're not just in a hotel room, you have maybe an advantage with the extra break. And now with the Jets seemingly about to get Gabe Vilardi back, getting the 27 goal score. Onto a team that hasn't had a lot of scoring outside of that top line, outside of Connor Scheifele and Eiafaal, they haven't really had a lot of punch, to be quite honest. And if you can get Vilardi back, that'll add a different layer and an extra element for the Blues to take care of.
Yeah. Meanwhile, we wait to hear what's up with Tyler Tucker after his premature departure from the game on Sunday. And I guess, I mean, they have a guy ready to go to jump back into that spot. But obviously, Tucker, I think, you know, by the fact that the time he got, Montgomery really liked what he saw from him.
Yeah, that was a tough blow, and it just because this is obviously a very physical series, a very firm opponent here. The Blues want to play the same way the Jets do, and that physicality that Tyler brings is welcome in the in his own zone. He can also deliver some occasional hits up the ice. Add to that element when the Jets are acting out, he's one of the guys which they did the last two games. He's a guy that can be there, be helpful in that scenario. And then, of course, the offense, his ability to put shots on the goal. And what we talked about earlier, he gets his shots through. That was a tough one. You know, Matthew, it just, you know, it, you know, we'll learn more after this taping. But obviously, when a player is helped off the ice like that, it looks like a serious knee injury. And it's a shame because, and I wrote about what a good year this has been for Tucker and how he's played his way into the future of this team as at least in the supporting cast, where back in October, that was not the case.
Yeah, I mean, as much as we talk about the Blues as a team, kind of maturing and progressing throughout the entire season, you know, Tucker himself has kind of had that as well. Last year, he was a frequent healthy scratch. He was in the NHL the entire season basically, but he only played 26 games. Like that's a lot of riding the plane and the bus and sitting in press boxes and getting bad skated during morning skate just to play in 26 games. And this year, you know, he was sent through waivers during preseason, and he spent the first couple months down in Springfield, and he came up and he basically had a job up until they would got completely healthy. And now he's got it back again as the Blues kind of favored him over Ryan Suter. And yeah, yesterday in game four, there was a lot that he was doing well. I mean, as you mentioned, the physical aspects, but there is also the, I guess, the funny exchange with Adam Lowry, where, you know, I think Lowry knows what Tucker's about and what kind of game he plays, and they get in a little scrum, and Tucker, Tucker falls down, and then the Blues get a power play out of it. So, you know, he's drawing a penalty there, he's scoring a goal, and, he's being physical. And so it was one of his, I mean, probably his best game of the playoffs. It's his first career playoff goal. And for the Blues, a shame that they could be without him. We don't know the exact severity of it, but when you're being helped off, you're not putting any weight on a leg. And honestly, when you look at the replay and you see kind of both legs buckle, it's not an ideal situation for a defenseman. But the good news for the Blues is that they do have a guy like Ryan Suter sitting around waiting and capable of coming in.
Yeah, it'd be interesting to see how Suter, after two games in which he didn't play and one game in which he kind of half played when they went with 7D, to jump back in. There's always, I mean, here's a guy that plays every game who is not used to having games off. So, this, whether psychological or physical, how it is for him out there in game five.
Well, yeah, Matthew, you would expect he's a pretty proud guy. And he did a lot for this team during the course of the year when there were guys in and out of the lineup when Leddy was missing much of the season. Of course, then Parayko misses time before you get Cam Fowler. You know, they were going through a lot of different things on the blue line, and he was one of the steadying forces. I got to think that I would be stunned if he didn't have a solid response. He can't do all the things Tucker did. Some things he can do better. He brings a different element, but I'd be surprised if he didn't have a good response.
Yeah, I mean, this is a guy who's played every regular season game in the last seven seasons. The last game he missed was during the bubble playoffs. He missed one game during that run for Minnesota. And is also a guy who, some of the reason why he came back this year to play again after being bought out by Dallas was that he wanted to prove that he could still play top 4 minutes, right? Like, that was legitimately one of the driving factors for Ryan Suter in continuing to play hockey. I mean, I know he also made another $3 million from St. Louis this year, so that doesn't hurt. But the fact is that he wanted to prove that that wasn't the end of his career by being bought out in Dallas, and that he could still play top 4 minutes. And there were a lot of times this year where he would take that role. I mean, before the Blues traded for Fowler and after Nick Leddy got hurt, like that 2 month time period from mid-October to mid-December, Ryan Suter was on the top pair with Colton Parayko. He was one of, if not the most used player in the NHL at 5-on-5, let alone starting basically every penalty kill on the ice for the Blues. Like, he's played a lot of hockey for them this year. And you mentioned Jordy, he's a very proud guy, and I would tend to vehemently agree with that assessment of him.
But Tom, I want to get your thoughts on a guy, because I got to get a little misty eyed at when things get a little chippy out there, thinking about how the playoffs used to be. And I'm impressed that although we haven't seen his shot lately, and we know it's there, and we are likely to see him assert himself offensively at some point, Zach Bolduc has gotten into the spirit of this thing. For a guy who's really young in age, he doesn't seem to mind putting himself in the middle of situations out there. As a guy like a veteran like an Adam Lowry would, as a guy like Tanev would, these are what these guys do. That's their job. That's what they do. And, to a degree, that's what Bolduc does. And yet he's pretty young to be throwing himself into these things.
Yeah, and in his career, has scored a lot of goals, so more goals than you would expect to see a guy throwing his body around out there. So that is I mean, I think I covered him when he got drafted, and I don't think that was what they were looking at, that he was going to be that. He was going to be a goal scorer. And if he's bringing another part to the game, that's good on him for doing that.
Yeah, I think he's kind of run himself into a little bit of trouble the more he does it. I think back, there's plenty of episodes to honestly call back on. It's that hit in the Winter Classic, putting Taylor Hall onto the Blues bench. Obviously, he had another one on Sunday in game four, putting Mason Appleton into the Blues bench. There was that the cross-checking he got fined for when Blankenberg in Nashville after he took a run at Thomas. Like, that was something that you wondered, would he have to answer for that in the next game against the Predators? Even that game against Utah, I believe, in the season finale, where he scores a goal, he drops his stick, and he flexes his muscles as a celebration. I think he was running around that night a little bit. He's taken a couple of away from the play penalties earlier in this series. Like, he's running around, and he's going to get himself into some trouble when he hits the wrong guy. But the fact that he has that sort of attitude is, I'm sure, part of what the Blues like about him, is that he puts himself out there. He's not afraid to go do those things, even if they might not be always the right move. And Yeah, it's a physical side that he didn't really know, as you mentioned, Tom. We didn't know that he had that all the time, but he's trying to show it off, I guess, now.
By the way, do we give Adam talking about Adam Lowry being a St. Louis kid? I don't know that we really acknowledge that fact among, St. Louisans in the NHL, that the fans haven't seemed to embrace him.
I did enjoy covering Rocket Dave Lowry back in the day, and of course Dave, one of the many Blues from that era who went on to get involved in coaching and other things in hockey. I mean, there are so many guys of that era that ended up doing that. You just remind now he is a mature player, and he's the kid of a guy that I remember covering. So at some point you start realizing you're getting old, is the bottom line on that. So
Yeah,
yeah, it's.
I wonder if it's like the same deal as like Phoenix claiming the Kachucks, right? Like
Not, I mean, and come on, he does have roots here, and it's great to see that St. Louis is putting out guys in the league who aren't directly related to former NHL players as well. So, but man, it does hold. I mean, again, you watch Chip off the block, because Dave Lowry he wasn't a dirty player, but he was a physical enough guy who played his role well. Like so many guys, they had the Bob Bassans and so forth on those teams. Fun to watch. And we're seeing that kind of hockey here. Now, one guy I wonder about, we saw him generate offense earlier in the series, and this is a war out there. Jimmy Snuggerud, still great instincts, looking to create offense, knows what to do with the puck. But this could be some tough sledding going up to Winnipeg. And we saw him respond last time, come out with some jump, but this is a tough series for him. Jump right in the NHL, and you're jumping right into this type of a series.
Yeah, I mean, he's one guy I'm not honestly not very worried about. He had a great game in game two up there, a great first period in game two in Winnipeg, in what was his fourth playoff period in his career at that time. Came home and he's been good. Like I don't worry too much about what Jimmy Snuggerud is doing or not doing. He's come in and he's fit in seamlessly with a top line in the NHL in the playoffs against the best team in the league. Like that's all you can really ask for out of a guy who's literally played 11 NHL games at this point. So that's I don't worry too much about him and what he can bring in game five.
Yeah, how old is Snuggerud? What's
He's 20. He turns
20? Yeah, I mean,
21
but
in
he
June.
plays like he's what, 29, 32? I mean, it's as though he's, this is old hat for him. And yeah, and maybe it's that he's Jimmy rather than Jim that we think of him, but he plays like an older man.
Right, like what if he was James or Jimbo? Like what does his game look
Yeah.
like then?
Yeah. Yeah, maybe just I kind of like it, like James Neal, like James Real Deal Neal. Yeah, just had a little different feel to it. All right, last guy I want to talk about here with Matthew DeFranks and Tom Timmerman here in the net front is, and he hasn't gotten much attention because he's always done is do his job so far. But Jordan Binnington continues to play aggressively. The last two games, he hasn't been really, the situations became such that the game was that he was able to watch the game for large stretches of it. But I love the way he's playing. He's aggressive. He's coming out on shooters. He plays a whole different game than Hellebuck. Hellebuck's a big goalie, stays six sits back in the net and is sound, but doesn't challenge. And we've seen the result of him not challenging at times being problematic. Binnington, that's not a problem. He will challenge. He came out in game four and took away a shot. Shot ends up grazing the crossbar, but he took away everything. He came out in front of the shooter, didn't give much. He's playing well. He's playing confidently, and he's in a different place than Connor Hellebuyck right now, mentally, it would seem. So, I will be interested to see how that goaltending matchup, the renewal of the rivalry we saw in Four Nations, plays out.
Yeah, I think you mentioned it there, Gordo. Like the Blues have kind of rendered Jordan Binnington's contributions that they're not meaningless or irrelevant, but like less important, right? Because when you're winning games by 5 goals and by 4 goals, like it's not as important that the goalie is standing on his head. But he's made some of the big saves when the moment has arisen, right? You think back to the Perfetti save in game three, and whether that was a goal or not, I think you can still be debated. But the fact that he's able to get over there and even get the glove out there and make that save is important enough. And in game four, there were some key saves you mentioned. I think it was Barron that was had that shot on him, and he planks the crossbar. But there were moments in the first period where it's still a tight game. And even in the second period before it got blown open, where Binnington's counted on to make some big saves. And this is a guy who relishes this moment, right? Like this is he loves these moments. And we've talked about it many times here on the net front that you go through the season's big games, and whether it's opening night, return to Toronto, a Winter Classic, Four Nations, the home games against Vancouver and Utah, like he's delivered in basically every single one of those instances, and he's doing it again right now.
I was surprised looking at numbers last night that he's actually still in the red in goals saved above expected, because it seems like it should be better than that. But yeah, he's Musetti, and as Jim Montgomery kind of said after the game, one of the differences, our goalie is making saves, and I think Binnington has been doing that at times. Like, I forget if it was game one or game two, but there was he probably could have with a would have been a nice save, but one of their go ahead goals, he. It would have taken work, but he could have had it, and that's the kind of save he had to make. But he's made the saves he's had to make in this game, in these past two games, and that has opened the door for these games to be routes.
Yeah, I think that I follow goal probably in game one where it kind of slips through his legs, and it's a tough bounce off the back of the net and stuff, but like that's probably one that he'd want to have back, right? But I think back to what you mentioned about Montgomery, and that's an easy way to do a two-sided zinger, right? Like you compliment your guy and you're also delivering a little bit of an elbow to Connor Hellebuck's ribs there.
I seem to be pretty pointed, for sure. And by the way, in terms of goaltending, Colton Parayko, stick to defense. That was not a good piece of goaltending he had when he's trying to protect the open side there. I was like, oops, didn't hold firm, didn't keep the pads together. So, but anyways, it does give the team a lot of confidence when you have a goaltender like that. And this has been a familiar theme for the team during the course of the year, that they can point to the fact that their guy can win big games, and it gives the team some belief. And then we'll see if there's any reverse effect of that in Winnipeg, if there's some doubt. Because if you have doubt in your goaltender, it changes the way you play, man. It's Matt, you've seen it, Tom, you've seen it. When goaltender shaky, guys play differently in front of them.
Yeah,
Like, if you
and
look at the career of Jake Allen in St. Louis at the end there.
it's not like Winnipeg has a better option. Like it's not like Edmonton where you look at it and all right, well, Skinner picker, like okay, six of one, half dozen of the other. Like you have Hellebuck and Eric Comrie. I don't think there's much of a choice here. So Scott Arneil made it pretty clear the other day he has 100% confidence in Connor Hellebuck. And yeah, maybe it's closer to like 75% or something, but coming out and saying 100, like it's, I think we can understand what the choice will be for game five, especially at home for them.
Well, that's Matthew DeFranks. I'm Jeff Gordon. We've heard from our old friend Tom Timmerman, who will be with us in the net front as long as the Blues are in this chase. We appreciate you guys making the time to visit here. And a reminder that this podcast and all the other cool stuff, the extra stuff we do on our digital edition of the St. Louis Post-Dispatch over at stltoday.com, will keep you up to date on the playoffs. There'll be a ton of content coming your way, so please do check it all out. For Matthew DeFranks, for Tom Timmerman, I'm Jeff Gordon. See you next time.
Finding great candidates to hire can be like, well, trying to find a needle in a haystack. Sure, you can post your job to some job board, but then all you can do is hope the right person comes along. Which is why you should try ZipRecruiter for free at ziprecruiter.com/zip. ZipRecruiter doesn't depend on candidates finding you. It finds them for you. Its powerful technology identifies people with the right experience and actively invites them to apply to your job. You get qualified candidates fast. So while other companies might deliver a lot of hay, ZipRecruiter finds you what you're looking for. The needle in the haystack.
See why 4 out of 5 employers who post a job on ZipRecruiter get a quality candidate within the first day. ZipRecruiter, the smartest way to hire. And right now, you can try ZipRecruiter for free. That's right, free. At ziprecruiter.com/zip. That's ziprecruiter.com/zip. ziprecruiter.com/zip.